Should federal rent control be extended? The National Broadcasting Company presents the American Forum of the Air, founded 22 years ago by Theodore Granick, and dedicated to the full and public discussion of all sides of all issues. Coming to you from the Continental Room of the Wardman Park Hotel in Washington, D.C. Now, here is your moderator, Theodore Granick.
President Truman this week requested an extension of federal rent control by a joint congressional resolution until next March 31st, pending a reexamination of the whole issue. The present control law expires on December 31st of this year, except in those communities where local governments take affirmative action to extend it for an additional 6 months. A resolution for extension is expected to be introduced in Congress after it convenes tomorrow. Proponents feel that the present international situation is perhaps the greatest single factor which indicates that rent control should be continued. Opponents, however, say there is no factual evidence of a need for continued federal rent control, that on the contrary, about 2,000 cities throughout the nation have refrained from taking action which is within their power to extend rent control beyond the first of the year. So the American Forum of the Air presents a discussion of this vitally important subject by two outstanding authorities, Tai Woods, the housing expediter, and Robert P. Gerholtz, president of the National Association of Real Estate Boards. Now, Mr. Woods, I have an article in front of me which appeared in the Washington Evening Star Tuesday, November 14th, written by Robert J. Lewis, Star staff correspondent, Dateline, Miami Beach, Florida. That magical city, I hope to be there in a few days. The article says, Robert P. Gerholtz, president of the National Association of Real Estate Boards, said the realtor's view that rent controls must be allowed to expire this year would not be changed even in the event of all-out war. How do you feel about that, Mr. Woods?
Well, I feel that there are several reasons why that opinion should be changed. First, we've got to realize that we are thinking of putting 3 million men under arms by 1951. And I noticed a release of the Defense Department just the other day in which the Defense Department has obligated $12 billion to be spent in one quarter. Industry and labor are beginning to gear for an all-out defense effort. We are beginning to see signs of critical housing shortages around some of our camps, our military installations that have been reactivated due to the defense effort. I think those all point to the idea that if this is a wartime matter, then we've got to consider the things that we have to do during wartime. And certainly rent control is one of them.
Mr. Gerholtz?
Well, Mr. Moderator, that's the same thing we've been listening to ever since VJ Day. Since VJ Day, this strange interlude between VJ Day and Korea, we probably had the most lush, the most prosperous, the most fantastic period of prosperity in the history of this country. And yet Mr. Woods and other advocates of the extension of rent control took pretty much the same argument. Now, under the present emergency, I don't know why we should have all this haste. As I understand it, rent control is not about to expire, that the present law extends until mid-1951. At least it extends until mid-1951 for every city in the United States that feels that they're facing a housing shortage or a housing situation. Now, let's assume that we're reactivating camps and remobilizing American industry for an all-out war effort. How do you increase or how do you relieve a housing shortage in a camp area or in an industrial area around a plant merely by controlling existing housing? It seems to me that the only way that you can meet that problem or solve that problem is by the production of additional housing units and facilities.
Mr. Expediter?
Well, there are a couple of parts of Mr. Gerholtz's question. First, this idea of rent control from VJ Day to Korea. I think it's been pretty well conceded. Certainly, I was of the opinion that prior to Korea, we had seen the last extension of federal rent control, the act which would expire in mid-June of 1951. As far as needing protection around camps and reactivated military centers, I agree the best way out of it would be to construct necessary housing. But at the same time that there are demands on housing, there will be demands for labor and materials for other just as important component parts of the defense effort. And rent control will keep down from keep rents from rising to exorbitant places while we are trying to determine can we place the housing, can we accommodate the people that are necessarily pulled into this matter because of the defense effort.
Well, I was interested to see an action taken by the Housing Commission in Detroit the other day, Mr. Woods, just Friday, in fact. The Housing Commission in Detroit recommended to the Common Council that they let rent control die January the 1st. Now, the reason for that was that in 1940, 53% of all the dwelling units in Detroit were rental units. And after 9 years of rent control, federal rent control, we've reduced that rental housing inventory from 53% in Detroit, which is one of the great arsenals, which is one of the important cities that we're looking to now in defense production, to an inventory of only 36%. In other words, that they feel instead of federal rent control providing more units for the tenants, that it has reduced the total number of units available for the tenants in America.
Gentlemen, what's the picture in Los Angeles? There's been a great deal of interest in the program from Los Angeles. Will somebody please explain it?
Well, without boring you, Ted, or the audience for a long discussion of a...
Or confusing me, Mr. Woods.
...of a legal question, the appellate court of the United States on Friday, in a decision reversing a lower court, said in layman's language that the city of Los Angeles did not follow their own local law in passing a decontrol resolution. Now, the briefs and the arguments and the what you lawyers call appearances of amicus...
You weren't looking at me when you said you lawyers.
...is about that...
He's looking at me.
Looking at you.
...that high off the desk. But briefly, that's the situation. The city of Los Angeles took action under the present rent act to decontrol. I did not sign the order. The matter went to court, and the court, the appellate court of the United States, has ruled that the city of Los Angeles did not follow local law in passing that decontrol resolution.
What about the other cities? How do they feel about it, Mr. Gerholz?
Well, our experience, and I have been in a number of cities in 42 states this year, in states and cities, you know, we've had a number of states control and a large number of cities control, decontrol. And wherever decontrol action has been taken, the dire consequences which were predicted by advocates of rent control never happened at all. In other words, they predicted that rents would triple and quadruple, that a chaotic condition would result and so forth. And I've talked to mayors in Chattanooga and Fort Worth, Dallas, and in other cities where they decontrolled. And they told me it was a very orderly and happy experience for the cities. And if anything, more housing was available, more apartments were advertised, and it, of course, greatly stimulated production of dwellings and housing units in those particular cities.
Well, I can't agree with that. I feel that we have to look to the cold-blooded statistics of the Bureau of Labor Statistics of the government, who made surveys in certain cities that had been decontrolled, and they found that rents did rise, at least in my opinion, exorbitantly. Rent increases...
What was the national average? I mean, as long as we're talking to a national audience, what was your findings for national average, Mr. Woods?
No national average was taken because it would be impossible in a short period of time. These figures were gotten ready for congressional hearings, and...
Does 12% sound about right to you? I mean, the figures you do have for an increased national average of all decontrolled units?
Well, no, and I think you're misled by taking a national average because if you take... Two houses that were standing side by side, and one didn't have the rent raised at all, and the other had it raised 100%. Your average would be 50%, but it'd be awful tough on that one that got the $100 raise. We wanted to find out what had happened in those cities, especially with regard to the people in the lower income groups, those that make up the biggest group of our people, the 25% who have the who have incomes of less than $2,000 a year, and the other 20% that have incomes of between $2,000 and $3,000 a year. Those people took the most severe increases in the cities that we discovered, and those increases, not only were they the most severe in amount, but the largest number of them had to take a rent increase. And, of course, those are the people...
You're talking about a house that rented, say, for a dwelling that rented for $15 and was increased to $30, for example. Is that what you have in mind?
No. Our break-off period was a rental of $30 a month, which in many, many cities is not... an unusual or out-of-the-way rent. Probably in most of our cities, our rental scales of the majority of the people in the city hover somewhere around between $30 and $40 a month.
Mr. Woods, what about the charge that rent control legislates against one class of our population?
Well, I don't think that is so, and I think the best answer, the answer that I could certainly not improve on, was the answer given by Chief Justice Holmes back in 1920. In a long opinion on the matter of rent control discriminating between classes, justice stated that where it's a matter of the public good taking paramount importance over the rights of any individual, it is not discriminatory.
How about that, Mr. Gerhold?
Gee, I'm more confused than ever after hearing that definition. In other words, what you're saying, that it's all right to take one group of society, one group out of our economy in America, it could be the farmer, it could be the laboring group, it could be the cotton grower, it could be the potato grower. In this case, it happens to be the family that have their hard-earned savings invested in a piece of rental property. And it's all right to single those people out and let all the rest of the economy go free. For instance, let wages increase through 239.6%, let household furnishings go up 181.4%, clothing 172.5%, food 166.5%, and have rents at about 96.9%. That is, those people whose savings, that represents thrift and hard work and sacrifice, have elected to invest it in our economy in real estate property that happens to be income property, that you're going to single them out and ask that group to subsidize another group. And you've subsidized the group that's reflected in this increase in wages. You take 1940, for instance, Mr. Woods. We had around 44 million people employed. Today we have 62 million. We've had an increase in national income of 250% in that time, from $84 billion to $220 billion. And yet you said it's all right to take those who've had their savings invested in real estate, to freeze them, and that there isn't anything inequitable or unfair about that. I'm at a loss to understand that position.
Well, Mr. Gerholz, you've got to look at it this way. All of those things in which you mentioned price increases, food, clothing, all of those things have one thing in common that's different than housing. If you can't afford to buy steak, you can eat stew. If you can't afford to buy a new pair of shoes, you can get the old ones resold. But in the case of housing, there is no substitute for shelter. You've got to take what the traffic will bear or be out in the cold.
Mr. Woods, isn't it a fact that since 1940, we're better housed than we've been any time in the history of this nation? On the basis of units per 100 population, aren't we better housed today than any time in the history of the country?
I think we are better.
And under rent freeze, haven't we frozen people in and frozen people out? For instance, we had 16 men and women in the armed services in the United States. When they came back to this country, we had a rent freeze on, so that these young people who spent 4 to 5 years in the service were frozen out of these apartment units and dwelling units. But we'd frozen in the people who've enjoyed an increase in wages and salaries of 239.6%. Is that a fact or isn't it?
No, I don't think it's a fact, because I don't think we froze them out. Those boys that came back here didn't have the choice of some of those.
Isn't it true that we made available to them the new units which were not placed under rent control? Weren't they made available, and weren't veterans given priority for those units?
That's true.
They had no priority or consideration at all for the vast reservoir of rental housing that was frozen under rent control in 1942. Is that a fact?
Yes, that's true. But, Mr. Gerholz, if you wanted to ration housing, That's something that we've never even thought about in this country to say to you. Because you are Joe Jones, you can have this man's apartment. He must be out in the cold. I don't think we ever would want to get into a situation where we would go in for a thing like that.
But when you freeze housing, in a sense, you do ration it. Perhaps not on a square foot basis. But you do ration it. You set it aside for a particular family that's frozen in.
You don't ration it. You protect people against an exorbitant increase in rent that they can't afford.
But you think it's equitable as far as the millions of people, and I understand there are at least some 6 million, and you'd know the figure better than I do. There's 6 million owners of income property in America at the present time. You'd say that as far as they're concerned, in the face of the increased costs of services and maintenance and all that sort of thing, that they've had an equitable and fair deal under rent control.
Yes, they've had an equitable deal, and I'll tell you why. In the first place, this is not a rent freeze. Rent control, the rent index, has been going up every month since the end of the war.
Up to what point now? I mean, what point are you at now compared with the other figures?
I don't know.
119, 120? Where are we at?
I just know that it's been going up. And
well,
secondly,
let's assume it's 120.
All right.
Would you agree that that figure is about right?
120?
Yes. As against the 35, 39 average?
All right. For the sake of argument, I'll assume it is. But let me get to my second point. And I think you, as a real estate man, will appreciate this. If landlords, in spite of rising costs and the other things that you mentioned, were not in an equitable position, they're not in the business of furnishing shelter for charity, they wouldn't be buying buildings. And I'm sure you know that if you take apartment buildings that you knew about in 1942 and have followed them, you'll find that as the years have gone on, in spite of rent control, the prices of those buildings have gone up and up.
Mr. Woods, don't you think that landlords should be compensated for increased costs of repairs and
definitely, and they are every day. That's what we're in business for, and they're being compensated.
The cost of services, Ty, I mean, can we establish this one fact? Isn't it true that the cost of services and the cost of maintenance have practically doubled since 1940, or the period that's under consideration here?
I think that's pretty true.
And you've recognized that an increase in rent today, that the rent factor at the present time, in the face of all of these other increases, stands at somewhere around 119 to 120%. And you think that that's equitable and fair. Now, haven't we recognized that you've cited some Bureau of Labor statistics that the cost of living index, for example, which has been recognized by large corporations, where we have bargaining between management and labor. Do you think it's wrong for the owner of property and the renter of property to have the same right of collective bargaining? Would you deny the right to one group and grant that right to another group in another area of our economy?
Well, I would deny it if that group controls a product that is a monopoly. There has been no free bargaining. I feel that where you have free bargaining in rent, in places that have been, we have found that the demand for housing has been reasonably met. What do we mean by that? We mean that a landlord and his tenants can, because of housing being available, can get together and bargain.
May I interrupt, take a question from the audience? Go ahead, please. Take a question from the audience. Go ahead, ma'am.
My name is Gertrude Harris. I'm a government secretary. My question is for Mr. Woods. What would happen to rents if controls were allowed to expire on December 31st?
Well, it's hard to tell. I believe that in some cities where the decontrol would be, where the housing would still be critical, that the results would be very drastic. I believe that in certain of our large industrial cities, that if that were allowed to happen, Mr. Gerholtz mentioned Detroit. I happen to know of the housing situation in Detroit, and I feel that in the city of Detroit, if controls were allowed to die on December 31st, that rents would go up, and would go up substantially. And that rent increase, because of Detroit's peculiar position in our economy, would be reflected throughout the entire country in the defense effort.
Mr. Gerholtz,
could I ask another part of that question? Mr. Moderator, I'd like to ask Mr. Woods whether it ever occurred to him, with his long and rich experience as housing expediter, whether or not, as long as housing is essentially a local problem, whether it couldn't be worked out and controlled very well within the framework of local government. Now, I happen to come from Flint, Michigan, a highly concentrated labor area, and I think you know what I mean by organized labor, Mr. Woods, because I'm sure your department is greatly under the influence of what labor wants and what it doesn't want. We've never had a federal rent administrator in that town. That's right, isn't it?
That's true.
Now, have you heard of any complaints in that particular town? We've worked it out there within the framework of local government with a simple ordinance. Couldn't we dispose of federal rent control, let it expire, let those cities take advantage of the extension to mid-1951? In the meantime, work out a framework of local law and local ordinance and get away from all the confusion, apparently, that we must get and must have whenever we have bureaucracy at the national level.
Mr. Woods?
I think the last act, the present Rent Control Act, was passed on the basis of local control at the local level. But that act was passed before Korea. That act was passed before the Defense Act of 1950. I think when you're in a defense effort, the ideas, the individual ideas of one community must be subjugated to the good of the entire nation. And you can't just let one city say, well, we don't like it, therefore we don't want it. If that city's business, if that city's economic position,
Mr.
Granick,
I think he's made his point. Ty, I'd like to raise this. As you began to have population shifts, whether it's to reactivated camp areas or to bomber plants or anything else, you not only create housing problems in those areas, but you have a hospital shortage, a school shortage, sewage disposal shortage, all of which no one knows and understands better than you. Are you recommending that in each one of those areas where shortages exist and are created due to these huge shifts of population, whatever problems are left in their wake, that the federal government should step in and help solve those problems? Was that the experience in the Second World War, or didn't those communities step up and meet most of those problems themselves in the area of schools and hospitals and so forth?
I'm only speaking in the area of rent control. I felt that during the war, the problem had to be solved on a national basis with one national law. And I feel the same now in the case of this present international situation.
May I take another question? Go ahead, sir.
My name is Stewart, and I have a question for Mr. Woods. Rent control has been extended for one more year for 34 successive years in France. And the result there has been ruinous, not only to tenants and owners of property, but to the entire national economy of France. Now, my question is that in asking for one more year again in the United States, aren't you, in effect, asking us for the same sort of stagnation that ruined rental home production in France?
No, I don't think so. In the first place, asking for rent control this time is based on an international situation. I have the story of France I know very well. I wonder how many people realize we all sort of look up to Switzerland. Switzerland has had a form of rent control for 150 years, but I don't think it has hurt the country. And I feel that where there's an international situation such as we have now, all of the efforts of all of us have to be pointed towards solving that situation.
Mr. Gerholz, do you want to comment or should I take another question?
Well, I think I'm ready for another question.
Go ahead, we'll take another question. Go ahead, ma'am.
I'm Mrs. Putney, and I would like to address my question to both Mr. Woods and Mr. Gerholz.
Let me give you a chance now, Mr. Gerholz. Go ahead.
A landlord is in business as any other person who makes his living from his capital. Is any other business so controlled he cannot use his profit, if any, to improve his property?
I don't think there's any question about it. From the way I've seen most of the rental property in this country, we've accumulated a gigantic work pile of needs, a gigantic work pile of what we call deferred maintenance and so forth, simply because the owners of rental property haven't had sufficient income to bring that property and keep it up to date. And I think the finest and quickest, the surest way to liquidate our huge reservoir of rental property and making it increasingly difficult for tenants to find a place to live is to extend federal rent control. As a matter of fact, I think it's the biggest fraud that's ever been perpetrated on a free people in a peacetime economy between VJ Day, at least, and Korea, of anything that I know of. When all other controls were removed, for some such simple excuses as we've listened to here today, they've always found some emergency or some new crisis or some reason for extending rent control. Now it's a new international situation.
Mr. Woods?
I, I agree. It is a new international situation. I think the fact that there have been 30,000 casualties in Korea is enough of an international situation to take a long look at whether we need rent control or not.
I must begin for summaries, Mr. Gerholz. Your summary, please.
Mr. Moderator, Congress has provided for a return to free contract for rental housing. It has done so through local option provisions and the termination date for rent control in the present law. There is no factual evidence of need for continued federal rent control. On the contrary, more than 2,000 cities throughout the nation have refrained from taking action, which is within their power to extend rent control beyond the first of the year. This includes most of the largest cities. In addition, 377 cities have taken positive action to get rid of rent control. This, in my opinion, is ample evidence that there is no national need or strong demand to continue government restrictions over rental property owners. Experience of the hundreds of communities which have returned to a free situation in rents clearly bears out the wisdom of Congress in taking the course it did.
Thank you, Mr. Gerholz. Mr. Woods, your summary, please.
The case for rent control stands on these four points. First, there is now a shortage of housing, and this shortage will become more acute as the demands of material and labor for defense work get into high gear. Second, the national defense effort calls for control in the interests of the men and women in the armed forces and their families. Personal sacrifice should not be increased by additional hardships arising from exorbitant rent gouging and insecurity. Third, any sharp increase in rent, and experience teaches us that these are inevitable if controls are taken off, will work hardship on that portion of the population which is least able to stand it. The one quarter of our families who fall in the low income bracket below $2,000 and the other 20% of our families who fall in the bracket between $2,000 and $3,000. The 45% of our families who now are paying about a quarter of their income for rent. And finally, a rent control referendum on the ballot on November 7th clearly indicate that when voters are asked whether they want rent control continued, the answer is a loud affirmative yes.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.